ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah.
This is a moment of opportunity for Lebanon to reassert its sovereignty across all of its territory. And I truly hope that this is not just another end of a cycle of violence, but it's the end period of all the violence.
How the Israeli-Hezbollah war changed the dynamic in the Middle East?
We are looking at is a reconfiguration of a regional system where I would say that on the one hand, following the weakening of the axis of resistance in Iran, there is much more space for Arab players that want stability.
Today is Wednesday, November 27th, and this is The Issue from VOA. I'm Scott Walterman in Washington. Lori is off today.
I'm pleased to announce that their governments have accepted the United States' proposal to end the devastating conflict between Israel and Hezbollah.
U.S. President Joe Biden announcing the ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah on Tuesday. Let's get the story from VOA's White House Bureau Chief, Patsy Wadakaswara.
After days of Israeli strikes on the capital of Beirut and other cities in Lebanon, and rocket fire from Iran-backed militant group Hezbollah into Israel, a ceasefire between the warring parties lauded by U.S. President Joe Biden Tuesday.
Effective at 4 a.m. tomorrow local time, the fighting across the Lebanese-Israeli border will end. This is designed to be a permanent cessation of hostilities.
Biden spoke following a speech by Benjamin Netanyahu earlier on Tuesday. The Israeli prime minister agreed to a ceasefire after over a year of cross-border clashes initiated by Hezbollah over the war in Gaza, where Israel is battling Hamas, another Iran-backed group.
With the United States' full understanding, we maintain full freedom of military action. If Hezbollah violates the agreement and tries to arm itself, we will attack. If it tries to rebuild terrorist infrastructure near the border, we will attack.
Netanyahu said Israel needs to refocus attention on its operations in Gaza following Hamas' deadly terror attack on Israel last October and the threat posed by Iran. But there is no indication the truce in Lebanon will lead to a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of Israeli hostages held by Hamas.
Over the coming days, the United States will make another push with Turkey, Egypt, Qatar, Israel, and others to achieve a ceasefire in Gaza.
In an address to a United Nations forum Tuesday, Iran accused the Israeli government of war crimes and genocide and welcomed the recent arrest warrant for Israel's leader issued by the International Criminal Court over the war in Gaza.
We are all obliged under international law to assist the Palestinian people in their lawful and legitimate struggle to secure their right for self-determination against occupation and apartheid.
Under the ceasefire, Israeli forces will retreat south of the Lebanon-Israel border, while Hezbollah will move north of the Litani River. The plan calls for the Lebanese army, which is not involved in the Israeli-Hezbollah fighting, to patrol the region between the two warring sides. The U.S. and France will help monitor ceasefire violations. Patsy Wadakaswara, VOA News, Washington.
Hezbollah emerges shaken from top to bottom, its leadership still reeling from the killing of its former leader, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, and its supporters made homeless en masse by the carpet bombing of Beirut's southern suburbs and the destruction of entire villages in the south. Hezbollah has been designated as a terror group by the United States, Britain, and other Western countries. And with the ceasefire taking hold on Wednesday, Hezbollah's agenda includes working to reestablish its organizational structure fully, probing security breaches that helped Israel land so many painful blows, and a review of the last year, really, including its mistakes in underestimating Israel's technological capabilities. So let's get some info from someone who's been there. Joining us now to share his perspectives is Avi Malamed. He's a former Israeli intelligence official and author of Inside the Middle East, Entering a New Era. So thank you so much for taking the time to join us and talk about this.
Of course.
Tell me your first thoughts about the ceasefire agreement.
Well, I think that the ceasefire, in the end of the day, reflects the needs and interests of both Israel and Hezbollah to have a ceasefire for their own different reasons. The ceasefire for itself is a quite sensitive sort of speaking, and it's very fragile, I would say. But roughly speaking, it seems that it has good trajectory ahead, in the sense that it will hold, because in the end of the day, it reflects interest of both sides to have this ceasefire. Obviously, each side walk away from this ceasefire, basically counting its own cons and pros, but this is a different perspective.
Well, I can see Hezbollah's side. You know, they've been really hurt badly by the war, leadership and materiel. What's Israel's... what do they walk away with?
Well, look, I mean, from the Israeli perspective and from a military perspective, Israel can definitely mark some significant achievements. As you accurately mentioned, Hezbollah has been significantly beaten. It's interesting to note in that regard that in the Arab world, the overall notion vis-a-vis this whole Israeli-Hezbollah collision is that Hezbollah has been defeated. And this is something for itself very interesting, because the Hezbollah position itself in the last couple of decades not only as the big power in Lebanon, but as a regional power, and to a large extent, basically it wasn't a baseless image. So the Hezbollah in the Arab world, there was shockwaves to see what happened to the Hezbollah during this collision with Israel, during this 1 year of collision, or a little bit more with Israel. So Israel, in that regard, can, from a military perspective, can definitely mark some significant achievement, particularly in the context of reestablishing or rehabilitating Israel's deterrence image that was badly crippled on October 7. On the other side, we still have to remember there are 70,000 or so Israelis that, as for the time being, are still refugees, the Israeli from the northern communities. They are not going back yet to the northern communities. There is clearly a discontent among those people who basically demand the government to continue full steam ahead and to totally crush Hezbollah. A request that, to a large extent, is not very realistic, I would add. So there is a sense of like a sourness among Israelis. Those Israelis who says it is the sourness is because the significant military achievement, there was an expectation that the outcome, let's put it this one, will be much more dramatic in sense of like securing their future living along the Israeli-Lebanese border. So I would say that this is another aspect from what Israel is taking away from this situation. I think in the wider perspective, I would say that the most significant thing, I think that we could expect a totally change of mindset and policy of the next Israeli government vis-a-vis the threats that are being built around Israel. In other words, I don't think that we will see again a situation where Israeli governments will sit aside and will watch Hezbollah building its capacities in South Lebanon or Hamas building its capacities in Gaza. It's very clear that Israel will move on to act proactively, very decisively to eliminate this building threat on its early phases. So I think this is one of the major differences as an outcome of this war.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I know that a lot of people are also disappointed. You mentioned Gaza, that the Gaza ceasefire wasn't tied together with the Hezbollah ceasefire.
Well, yes, that's disappointment. You know, in a way, ironically enough, is common denominator between Palestinians and Israelis, or some Israelis, particularly Israelis, of course, who wants to see the Israeli hostages back home as soon as possible. So, in a way, it's kind of like ironically speaking, because this is the common denominator. The wish for a ceasefire. It's interesting, by the way, to say that from the Hezbollah perspective, Hezbollah launched the attacks on Israel on October 8. The leader of Hezbollah, Nasrallah, that was eliminated later on, he basically said we are doing this supporting Gaza, and we will not stop the war until there will be ceasefire in Gaza Strip. So now there is no ceasefire in Gaza Strip, and yet Hezbollah agreed to ceasefire with Israel, which also, again, it's kind of like adding to the notion in the Arab world that Hezbollah has been significantly defeated. Not so surprisingly, I mean, people in the Arab world understood that in the end of the day, this whole issue of Hezbollah taking Israel to support Gaza is basically nothing but a sort of an excuse to cover up other things. But in the end of the day, the bottom line is that when you look at that, at least from an Arab perspective, it's quite clear that they view Israel as the one that had the upper hand in the confrontation with Hezbollah.
Don't you think that also in the wider sense that all of the anti-Israeli alliance has been sort of exposed as a paper tiger, including Iran itself? I mean, Israeli intelligence has everybody's number dialed in, it looks like.
Well, look, I would put it this way. It's clear that following October 7 and everything that happened since then, today we can say that what we call the axis of resistance, namely Iran and its different proxies, particularly when we talk about Hezbollah and Hamas, major proxies in this Iranian-backed infrastructure that is called the axis of resistance, it has been significantly weakened. Definitely not in the same power it has prior October 7. And so this is something for itself very significant to notice. However, I would also mention, you know, it's not tiger made of paper, because in the end of the day, we should remind ourselves. I mean, those proxies, and let alone the Iranians, maintain a significant military capacities that can cause a significant damage. I mean, we are looking at huge arsenal of thousands and dozens of thousands of missiles and rockets and attacking drones. The Iranian regime is constantly engaged in building military capacities and delivering its military capacities to its proxies. And those military capacities are very harmful. They are very dangerous. So I wouldn't say tiger of paper. I would definitely say that, yes, they have been significantly beaten. Israel has been performing outstandingly, sort of speaking, in terms of intelligence and military capacities and technological capacities. But I would not undermine the Iranians and the proxies' harmful impact. In the end of the day, we have some examples. We should remind ourselves that unless Israel had the ability to successfully intercept most of the incoming rockets and missiles and drones that were launched by Hamas and Hezbollah and the Iranians, the situation would have seemed totally different. I mean, we would have been in a totally different situation. So we should remind ourselves that is the right dimensions of the picture that we should look at.
Yeah, I know. I get what you're saying. What I was really thinking was, so the alliance of Israel and the Western countries that support them, Great Britain, the United States, and so on, stood fast and had the technology to repel, as you point out, the drone and missile attacks by Iran. And when it came to the end of that volley back and forth between Israel and Iran, Iran stopped firing weapons at Israel, so that they would not engage directly the United States and the other Western powers. The same thing with the other proxies. You said that, as you pointed out, Hezbollah says we're going to fight until the war in Gaza is over, and they didn't. Hamas has been pretty much decimated. Hezbollah has been pretty much significantly reduced, if not decimated. And so the other players in the region, the other Arab nations that are also where Iran is also a thorn in their side, sees that at the end of the day, while they have a lot of weapons and they have the capacity to cause a lot of trouble, they are not what they said they were.
Look, there are different aspects here. Let us remember that Iran attacked Saudi Arabia and caused Saudi Arabia a significant damage in a relatively short attack a couple of years ago. So we should remind ourselves that, yes, that is correct, that the Arab players in the region who are threatened by the Iranians and the axis of resistance definitely are not shed no tear over the defeat of Hezbollah. They shed no tear over the decimating of Hamas. And of course, the fact that Iran has been facing some significant pushback. That is for itself a very significant achievement. Remember, of course, that one of the significant equations that was changed during that year is the one that up until now, the Iranian regime was actually in a win-win situation, meaning it was activating its proxies at will, but it was totally exempted from any repercussion. Now, for the first time following since the Iraqi-Iranian war, Iran has basically directly attacked and sustained some significant damage on its soil following the Israeli retaliation, following Iran attacks on Israel on October 1st. So this is something that has been significantly changed, and this is significant. And as you accurately said, you know, the Arab regional players who are concerned with the Iranian threat, the Saudis, the Emiratis, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, obviously are satisfied with the fact that the axis of resistance has been weakened. But that, again, they do also remind themselves that the Iranians' enter proxies can cause a significant damage. And so, for example, if you look right now, you know, the Saudis are continuing their dialogue with the Iranians, even kind of like in a more smiley way, not because they know exactly who's their neighbor are, but the Saudis understand that in the end of the day, Iran is in the region. It's a significant player. It has a significant ability to cause damage. So the Saudis are aware of that. In other words, what we are looking at is a reconfiguration of a regional system where I would say that on the one hand, following the weakening of the axis of resistance in Iran, there is much more space for Arab players that want stability. There is much more larger room for maneuvering and space for proactive approach that will serve their need in stability. And that will be at the expense of Iran, Iran's hegemonic vision. But on the other hand, they will still continue to find way to conduct, conduct a productive dialogue, let's put it this way, with the Iranians. And so I think this will be part of the reconfiguration geostrategic landscape of the region.
All right. Thanks so much for the perspective. And we'll talk again soon when the new administration starts to take shape and Middle East policy has the potential for that change as well.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Avi Melamed, former Israeli intelligence official and author of Inside the Middle East, Entering a New Era. There will be plenty to keep an eye out on the situation in Gaza, particularly over the next couple of days and weeks, as the United States and the other nations that are engaged in trying to broker a peace deal now between Hamas and Israel turn their attention fully to that situation. This has been The Issue from the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us today. You can follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7, whenever you need it, whenever you want it, go to our website, voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.